Exciting news from the EAN. Since January 2025, EAN Campus is open to all associate members. If you're part of a National Neurological Society in Europe, you may already have access. Just log in with your MyEAN account at eancampus.org and explore top quality content. More details in the episode description.
Welcome to EAN Cast, your weekly source for education, research, and updates from the European Academy of Neurology.
Hello and welcome to EAN Cast, Weekly Neurology. I'm Alicia Corroni, a neurology consultant at the Geneva Memory Center, and I'm also the co-chair of the EAN Task Force on Neurologist Wellbeing. This task force was recently established to explore the conditions that impact the health and well-being of neurologists across Europe and to identify strategies, particularly preventative ones, to combat issues like burnout. Together with my co-chair, Dr. Luca Cuffaro, we've created a podcast series dedicated to well-being in the neurology community and to talk also about burnout. This is the second episode in our series and is titled Burnout in Neurology, Real Cases and Practical Lessons. And today I'm joined by two exceptional guests, Professor De Visser, Emeritus Professor of Neuromuscular Diseases at the University of Amsterdam in the Netherlands, and a longtime advocate for fighting burnout and promoting well-being. Hello, Professor De Visser.
Hello, Alicia. Good to be here.
Nice to be with you today. And Dr. Margarita Granneva, a neurologist based in Ljubljana, who leads one of the subgroups within our task force and who has collected first-hand accounts of burnouts at various stages of training and practice. Hello, Margarita.
Hello, Alicia, and thank you for the invite.
Yeah, thank you both for being here today. So let's get started. So Margarita, I would like to begin with you. As I mentioned before, you've been gathering real stories from junior neurologists and medical students across Europe. Could you share one of the cases that really stayed with you? And could you tell us what you think it reveals about the unique pressures and challenges that are faced by young professionals in neurology today?
So I will share with you the story entitled Identity Crisis, which is about Hannah, who is a 30-year-old neurology resident doing most of her rotations at a university clinic in Southern Europe. She moved to a foreign country when she was 18. She pushed through many obstacles, from learning a new language to finding a second family, her best friends. She's in her third year of training, and she just started her PhD studies. Her schedule is quite busy. She's on call at least four times per month. A shift like that for Hannah lasts from 28 to 32 hours. And for half of the time, she covers both the department in the emergency room. Good thing is, she can achieve her moving goal at work. She's also responsible for organizing lectures and workshops for young neurologists on a weekly basis, keeping her colleagues informed about educational opportunities home and abroad, and trying to solve any problems that come their way during the residency. This year, Hannah is pushing her limits to finish the PhD thesis by the first deadline. She's overworked and fails. In this case, the first challenge Hannah emphasized was work management. As a matter of fact, for a longer time, she was one of only two residents at the wards, and when her colleague had other duties, Hannah had to take care of all the patients who were admitted at the department, which is approximately 20 patients. Her senior colleagues were trying to help, but they were simultaneously seeing patients at the outpatient clinic. Therefore, Hannah was stuck at work until 7 p.m. to prepare all the paperwork, even though her overtime was not paid. Another challenge was finding quality time for education. Hannah was constantly working but saw no progress in her knowledge. She felt guilty that she had no time to study or be at the outpatient clinic more often to learn how to approach a patient in that setting. Stigmatization and lack of support also appeared to be an important challenge. Hannah explained to her mentor that she is burnt out and asked for help. She was called irresponsible and lost collaboration, which led to deepening the feelings of insecurity and despair. Apparently, at the hospital, no one ever talked about this. The general opinion is that the young generation are just lazy, and in former times, doctors had similar problems, but did not complain all the time. Finally, personal life was also a challenge. Hannah was working for 3 weeks in a row, reaching a record of 96 hours in 1 week. Work drained her social battery and she felt tired and isolated.
Thank you, Margarita, for sharing such a powerful example. And as you mentioned, it highlights many of the issues and challenges that young neurologists face nowadays. And we know that this is not an isolated case. In fact, from a survey that was conducted by the RFS in 2021 and led by Giovanni Di Liberto, nearly 74% of European neurology residents, junior neurologists and research fellows reported signs of burnout, and 22.6% met full criteria for burnout. So it's really clear that burnout is not an isolated problem, is not being responsible, is a huge problem, an issue that we need to face in the neurology workforce. We know that, as you mentioned, it affects neurology trainees, but that's not only the case. We know the senior clinicians, researchers, and professors also experience chronic stress, exhaustion, and disengagement, sometimes even after decades in the profession. So I would like to turn to Professor De Visser and ask whether she could share some insights on how burnout can manifest among more senior colleagues and whether there are any studies on this.
Thank you very much, Alicia. First of all, one of my colleagues, an advanced neurologist, suffered from a burnout. So indeed, it's not only residents and research fellows, but very recently, actually in February, a paper was published by Guo and co-authors who performed a systematic review and a meta-analysis, and they found a burnout prevalence ranging between 18 and 94% across six countries: Spain, Greece, China, United States of America, Brazil, and the Philippines. And they also found that available published data span different levels of training, different sample sizes, different survey tools with different cutoffs used for burnout within the same tool. And they concluded that although burnout rates amongst neurologists were found to differ by country, it's clearly evident from their systematic review that a great deal of neurology physicians are experiencing burnout across the globe.
Absolutely. And this raises also some problems related to the research in burnout that, as you mentioned, there are many differences in the type of skills that are used, in the type of maybe interventions that have been used to prevent it or to palliate or to improve the situation for neurologists at different levels. Now I would like to ask you to zoom a little bit out, and I would like to ask you what are the factors that systemic factors that could drive burnout in neurology today?
Well, it has already been mentioned in Margarita's real-life case, actually. Excessive workload, hours, and patient volume, what we call loss of autonomy, lack of control over the work schedule, but also with regard to women who suffer from burnout, variability in compensation, burn of being on call. She was working 96 hours or something like that, and days on call, and differences in clerical task requirement. So those are the factors that contribute to burnout. But maybe Margarita has other factors that she came across during her study.
In my experience, as you already mentioned, one of the biggest problem in definitely the high patient volume, the complex cases. We know that neurological disorders are usually chronic, they are multi-faced, difficult to manage, they require extended visits and close follow-ups. And many health systems don't allow enough time per patient, which leads to rushed visits and cognitive overload. Lack of staff means as well longer hours, more call duty, delayed care of patients, which also heightens stress for the clinician. Another thing is documentation and administrative burden. As I already mentioned in the case example, this usually requires doing paperwork in free time without being paid for it. And in some systems, neurologists lack access to interdisciplinary patient management. They end up being de facto the care coordinator, the mental health provider, the social advocate, roles for which they may not be trained or resourced. Neurology is also a field where intellect is highly valued, and this publish or perish culture is also putting a lot of pressure on evolving in research besides clinical practice. But unfortunately, there is not enough protected time for these activities in many, many systems. Again, as I already mentioned, admitting mental health struggles in the work environment is usually not welcomed and is seen as a sign of weakness.
Yeah. And may I again refer to Giovanni Di Liberto's paper, Alicia, which you mentioned, that he showed that an elevated number of night shifts per month, work-related fatigue, and low professional satisfaction are independent risk factors for burnout.
Yeah, absolutely.
Interestingly, recently a survey amongst neurology residency program directors was published last year in Neurology Education, and that showed that 94% of the program directors reported feeling valued in their role, which was associated with a lower level personal and work-related burnout. So that is very interesting.
That definitely, all the things that you and Margherita just have said really resonate with me, with my experience as well. And I think it resonates with the experience with many of the European neurologists in training, research fellows, and even senior neurologists who are listening to this podcast. And as you mentioned, there are different layers of systemic factors that can impact on the burnout and well-being of the neurology workforce. And there are some measures that can be taken, as Professor Marianne was saying, like the fact of being valued is already something very important. But we know that burnout presents with different profiles, so different measures will be needed for different types of burnout. And we will talk about that in the future episodes of the ENCAST of this month. I wanted to move more on a topic that Professor Marianne started to talk about, which is the fact that burnout doesn't affect everyone equally. And we know that there are gender disparities that intersect with burnout risk in neurology. So I was wondering whether Professor De Visser and maybe Margherita as well could also speak about that.
Yeah. Well, you know, there is an evidence that professor rank and being 15 to 20 years post-graduation were independent predictors of low burnout. But unfortunately, and I can only speak for my country, female neurologists are still lagging behind as regards professor appointments. And I'm not sure about the other countries. As said before, I can only talk about the situation in the Netherlands. And wages in my country also differ between men and women who are working in university hospitals, disadvantages women. And this, of course, requires action from the leadership of the department or the university hospitals. In addition, the tasks of motherhood and responsibility at home still rest on women in the Netherlands, despite the fact that fathers are gradually more involved in domestic tasks. And this is a cultural thing and much more difficult to change.
I can also say on my part that there are subtle gender biases in hiring, in promotion, evaluation, and this can erode professional confidence and job satisfaction for women. For example, I remember that a colleague didn't get the opportunity, more accurately, the financial support to attend a workshop abroad because her younger male colleague was favored by the head of the department. Daily microaggressions, such as being interrupted more frequently in meetings, being treated differently than men on the ward, and differently, of course, means with less respect, being mistaken for non-physicians or not taken enough seriously as physicians are just few of these situations women face or on a weekly or not so on a daily basis. Fewer women hold high-ranking academic roles in neurology, and they are limitedly represented in research, which can also contribute to career stagnation. Women are also often accused of not being able to perform these roles. If they decide to have a family, or if they decide not to have a family, they are accused of being too emotional to perform these roles. So in such male-oriented world, it can be very hard for women to also find community, to find validation, I think.
And I think the last thing that you mentioned is very important, finding a community. That means also finding mentors, means finding leadership. And I think this is when we have these factors that come to play a role, like cultural factors, this is where institutional accountability should come into place and should play a role and define what are the fact that this type of behavior should not be allowed, and the institution should be accounted for this and play a critical role in these situations. And actually supporting women neurologists means also supporting the long-term health of our entire field. So it's very important not to forget these gender disparities and how they can play a role not only in accessing careers, but also in well-being and in burnout. We started to touch upon some practical advice. So what, in your experience, Margherita and Professor De Visser, what can neurologists and trainees do to establish a better balance and prevent burnout?
Well, first and foremost, I think that it's up to the leadership to take action. I already mentioned that. They need to decrease workload, establish work hour restrictions, allow for more autonomy in the workplace, and also the residents need to be assured that there is staff support, mentorship. Margherita mentioned it a few times, sufficient supervision. But on the other hand, the residents could also take action themselves by giving social support to their colleagues, for instance. And variation during the residency training is of utmost importance. And the Dutch curriculum is 6 years. That's quite long, but 6 years. And within that curriculum, there is a room 1 year to dedicate to research, to subspecializing, for instance, in ICU medicine or clinical neurophysiology or child neurology or neuromuscular diseases. And I think that that variation and that there is room for instance, research might help avoiding creating burnout.
Yeah, on my part, I think definitely the main role is on the side of the institutions. On a more individual level, from my perspective and from my own personal experience, I think that it is important to also set boundaries very early and very firmly to protect your personal time, to designate certain times like evenings or weekends as off limits for work and communication with colleagues or even patients. To learn how to say strategically no, like to decline projects that maybe don't align with your goals, and also to use team support, to lean on coworkers as well as your family, as well as your friends, regular check-ins with the mentor that can also help. Of course, that must be a mentor that knows how to listen, that knows how to recognize this problem, and that can help to set your priorities over and over again. And what I think that I also learned, again, coming from a personal experience, is to take a sick leave when you feel like you need it. On the long term, of course, it's on institutions and on leaderships to take actions more in preventing the problem than after that finding solutions.
Absolutely. So as you mentioned, there are systemic changes that touch the institution and some others that touch more the individual. And I think the other part of the role that we can have is also to recognize burnout, because I think there is also an issue of recognizing burnout and not disguising that for being not sufficiently strong or being tired. So do you think that there should be a role for training in neurology to teach students, medical students from the early age to senior neurologists to recognize the signs of burnout and sometimes even to work on burnout prevention, which for now is not part of our training programs.
I'm not sure about that. I leave that to Margarita. What I do know is Margarita already mentioned that there is a huge task for the leadership of the institutions and also of the departments. And you mentioned already, Margarita, that the leadership should implement staffing models that reduce overwork, enhance recognition and reward programs, foster a supportive work culture. So I think it's of utmost importance that the program director and the staff need to be aware of the signs and act swiftly. And on the other hand, and Margarita mentioned that as well, there are also individual strategies like developing healthy coping mechanism. And you mentioned, Margarita, setting boundaries between work and personal life. And also, and that might be very difficult, and maybe that was the case with Hannah as well, seeking help when needed. So I leave it to you if it should be part of the neurology training. I'm not sure about that. I do know that happy doctors lead to happy patients. So again, Alicia, you mentioned it before, prevention is key.
Yes, I was thinking a lot about this. And I can say that there is a general opinion in the environment where I work, like from people that are not in the healthcare system. Usually when doctors complain about the work environment, about the conditions, about the salaries, about whatever they complain, the general opinion is you knew what you were putting yourself into. And I think we didn't really knew what we were putting ourselves into from that perspective. We were taught how to, I don't know, talk with patients, diagnose, treat, etc., etc. But we were probably not taught how to deal with this amount of stress. So I think that maybe for starters, few seminars or workshops, not only for the residents, but maybe the whole department shall be implemented. As we have, like, I don't know, stimulation of CPR or, I don't know, stimulation of firing the hospital and stuff like that. I think that we shall have these types of programs, like educational programs on burnout. And even I remember during the COVID pandemic, there was a telephone number that was working for doctors. It was open, anonymously you could call and say if you have if you're facing problems with stress, with emotional disorders and stuff like that. And I think we need this kind of support also from other colleagues, like psychologists maybe, so that if somebody is facing the problem, they have a free form of getting help. Also for medical students, I'm not very sure if this should be like obligatory, but at least as an additional subject, I think it is good. I remember that we had during the studies a subject on communication between the patient and the doctor. And I think we should also have communication between the doctor and other colleagues, which can also a few changes there can also lead to feeling better in the work environment and maybe not leading to burnout. So I think there are a couple of options that can be implemented.
Yeah, I totally agree with you, Margarita. And I think that IMUSAR is not only within the clinical field, but we know that awareness is fundamental. And being able to put a name to how we feel, what are the struggles that we go through, is a very important part to be able then to openly talk about the struggle and together find some solutions or try to prevent the issues that led to the development of burnout so that other people do not have to experience what we've been through in our training. And as you mentioned, neurology is a very demanding field, not only from the timing, the night shifts, but also from the emotional part of point of view, because we deal and we care for chronic patients. And this can be very difficult for their side, but also for us emotionally. And I think that a healthy neurology workforce can also provide better care. And we can talk in about this openly and spreading the awareness about burnout can also help in us breaking the stigma and finally find solutions together. So I would like to thank you both so much for this thoughtful and deeply honest conversation. The stories and all the perspectives that we share today will, I'm sure, resonate with many of our listeners, and they definitely resonated with my story, my experience in neurology. Burnout is real. Let's break the stigma together by building supportive environments, advocating for equity, and promoting a culture that values well-being. I'm sure that we can make a difference. Thank you to the two wonderful speakers, and thank you to everyone for tuning in to this episode of the ENCast. Be sure to join us next week as well. Until then, take care. Bye-bye.
This has been EANcast Weekly Neurology. Thank you for listening. Be sure to follow us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or your preferred podcatcher for weekly updates from the European Academy of Neurology. You can also listen to this and all of our previous episodes on the EAN campus to gain points and become an EAN expert in any of our 29 neurological specialties. Simply become an EAN individual member to gain access. For more information, visit ean.org/membership. That's ean.org/membership. Thanks for listening. ENCast Weekly Neurology is your unbiased and independent source for educational and research-related neurological content. Although all content is provided by experts in their field, it should not be considered official medical advice.